come on in.
And now, back to the Bill Frank Radio Show.
The kids love him.
And your host,
welcome to paradise,
Bill Frank.
Welcome back. I'm Bill Frank. In this constantly connected 24/7 three-screen world in which we live, there's incredible pressure being put on brands and brand marketers. We're seeing decades-old brands like Radio Shack, Nokia, and Pontiac disappear. How will brands survive? And which ones are more likely to survive? My next guest is a futurist, market researcher, strategist for some of the world's biggest brands. We'll examine the future of brands and marketing from his latest book, Brand Shift. Owen Shapiro has worked across a wide range of industries, including retail, financial services, consumer products, and government business. He has worked with and supported the teams that have built some of the U.S.'s best-known brands, including Staples, PetSmart, Sports Authority, Ulta, and Five Below. Owen speaks pro bono at the University of Chicago, where he received his master's and his MBA. Joining us from Chicago, Illinois, welcome to the show, Owen. How are you today?
Very good. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being a guest. Loved your book, Brand Shift, because it was so thought-provoking. And I guess I want to start with the big picture. I mean, if you take a look at the demise of brands like Borders Books or Wonder Bread, Twinkies, E.F. Hutton, Bear Stearns, I mean, the list goes on and on and on. So the big overarching question's got to be, are brands dead or maybe dying?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, you'll see, I think certainly there's more volatility in brands. So the ability of a brand to stay on top has shrunk. So the amount of time a brand spends as a dominant brand is really in decline. So we still have, you know, huge brands that people really care about and, you know, add a lot of value to the products they make. You know, Apple is sort of the perennial example, but there's others too, like Google is one and Trader Joe's. These are brands that people love to talk about, love to, you know, add to the conversation about what they're doing. When Apple comes out with a, there's about a twofold multiplier effect from a message from Apple because of all the pass along that people are doing. So
yeah.
Some brands are sort of benefiting from this era, but definitely the stability of brands is changing. So.
Well, let me stop you there, Owen, if I can for just a minute, because all of the brands that you just mentioned, Google, Apple, even Trader Joe's, they've only been around a relatively short time. I mean, if you take a look at brands like Ivory Soap, that's been around for over 100 years. Bass Ale, over 150 years. Even Ford Motor Company's been around for 100 plus years. That's the kind of longevity that people sort of associate with brands. But then think about brands that have had maybe less of a life cycle. Pets.com, which came and went. Compaq, Netscape, just to mention a few. Those guys were gone in just a few years. So, I mean, there's a shortening of the life cycles of brands, as you have quickly pointed out. But I guess the bigger question is, what does that mean for marketers? And what does that mean for businesses who are generating cash based on those brands?
Yeah, I think it there's a couple of things. First, you know, the idea that you, this idea of brand equity that people, you know, have talked about, kind of think about, is a metaphor saying that, you know, the brand has this, it's kind of like having money in the bank, I guess, with your brand that you can draw on over time. That notion is really, I don't think, a useful metaphor anymore for thinking about brands. The value of brands is really their ability to connect and open up to the other, you know, the customers and the world in general and be relevant to other topics and conversations rather than just the ones that they want to have on air. So you are seeing, you know, definitely a switch from those kind of perennial dominant brands, some of which are still around and, you know, still very important, but you know, the mobile handset market is one I like to describe or just talk about, because within the last 10 years, you've had arguably five leadership switches, you know, going all the way back to Motorola and the Razr in 2007, and then Apple came up with a phone that completely changed the game. It's no longer about how cool the phone looks. The phone looks pretty dorky, really, but it's about the software. So these because of the technological change in the shift age that we're, you know, talk about in the book, the underlying technology that drives communication, which drives all brands and advertising, but also drives a lot of the products that people buy, is changing much, much more rapidly. And the brands, you know, frankly, get out of step, for better or worse.
Well, let me ask this, though, because you've talked about this compression of the cycle, the five turnovers of leaders in the mobile phone market, which is a great example. What does that mean, though, for companies who've got to generate cash, generate business? If you looked at BlackBerry, for example, RIM Technologies, when they invented the BlackBerry, it was dominant for several years. Now, you know, they can't find a home. And then subsequently, not only for the companies, but for the investors, what does this mean? If you're trying to invest in some of these technologies,
yeah,
what does it all mean?
Well, that's, you know, that's a great question. You know, I think part of it is that there are probably shorter cycles of profitability. So you're seeing these, you know, phenomenal, you're out in California, obviously, these phenomenal creations of wealth from companies, you know, getting valued at billions of dollars just out of the box, really, you know, before they even have a well-established market. So the value creation has been compressed, and, you know, it's a much shorter window in which you can create value or destroy value. For investors, you know, I don't know. I mean, it does point to the opportunities to look for some of these game-changing technologies and try to take advantage of them. Overall, as you know, on average, this is, I believe, a positive for the economy because it's bringing a lot of new products to market, dropping prices on products, introducing new services. You know, a great example, an example I really like is, you know, at the beginning of 2007, there were zero app downloads per day in the world, and now they're over a quarter billion per day. So there's a market that just exploded, and, you know, some people got on the train and tried to figure out how to make money on apps, and, you know, clearly the biggest moneymaker on that was Apple at the time, who was sort of the curator of the apps rather than creating most of them. It's, you know, becomes much more strategic in the sense that you need to be positioned properly. You know, Motorola didn't lose its place in the handset market because it stopped making good phones. Its phones were still the coolest designed phones out there. Just people stopped caring about how the phone worked, and they wanted to know how the software worked. So,
well, it is a titanic shift. My guest is Owen Shapiro, author of the book Brand Shift, The Future of Brands and Marketing. So let's look at this from the consumer's point of view for just a minute with this rapid turnover. If you take a look at the volatility of marketing in the shift age, which we've been talking about, won't people, consumers like us, just gravitate towards brands with which they're already familiar? And doesn't that give a huge advantage to the established brands?
Yeah, there's a lot going on the consumer side from all this that hasn't been talked about as much as on the marketing side, in my opinion. So at the same time that marketers are struggling with all these technological changes and how am I going to get my message out there and so on, consumers are struggling with the problem that artificial intelligence and, you know, super large databases and so on and so forth are increasingly impinging on what have been good paying jobs and, you know, career type jobs. So consumers are under a lot of pressure in a couple of different ways. Some, you know, will benefit greatly from this expanded economy, and others are going to find that their livelihoods and kind of their view of themselves really is going to be put under a lot of pressure as they, you know, it's similar to what happened to the factory workers in the 70s and 80s when, you know, the steel mills were shedding people like crazy. And, you know, there was, you know, if you've been a steel worker for 20, 30 years, what do you go off and do then? You know, what's your next gig?
Or take it back even farther. Look at the textile workers in England when the loom first came out, and that's where we get the term Luddites. Are we going to see a resurgence of the modern-day Luddite?
You know, it's certainly something that you could predict and that people will, you know, see some pushback against in some cases. Right now, for most people, the explosion of technology and communication and so on has really been to their benefit. So there's much more entertainment available, communication, distractions, and so on and so forth. So for, you know, I think most people are, you know, a lot of people who are, you know, relatively affluent, middle class, and so on, above, you know, it's really been mostly a plus. But I think what's going to be interesting is in the next few years as this artificial intelligence grows and becomes much more pronounced. Now there's kind of pockets of it, you know, self-driving cars and Jeopardy being won by a Watson computer. But as jobs like accounting and, you know, paralegal jobs and other jobs that even radiologists, perhaps, you know, some aspects of radiology start to get automated, that's where I think you might see a pushback. And, you know, the Luddites weren't particularly successful in the end, you know, for better or worse. Passed a few machines, but the looms kept coming.
So. Ultimately, that is very true. My guest is Owen Shapiro. So, Owen, what you're talking about here with artificial intelligence and so forth is really what you lump in the book into a category called big data, and that's what's causing the volatility. So how do you foresee big data impacting marketing? And what are the elements of big data that you talk about in the book?
Right. So big data, just so, you know, just to get everyone on sort of the same page, there's a lot of, you know, it's a term that's thrown around a lot, and there's always been a lot of data out there. I think what makes data big is, first of all, just the sheer volume. I mean, the magnitude of the data that's being generated now, particularly from mobile devices is a good example. Every mobile device is constantly sending off information about where you're located, what apps you're using, so on and so forth, your usage. And this data is, you know, just being collected in semi-structured way, but it's these massive databases that are being created kind of accidentally, just because we have, you know, we're going to soon have a billion supercomputers walking around in people's hands, all sending out data about what they're doing. So big data is really this idea of data that's created for some other purpose, but then businesses find a way to use it. And one of the uses is obviously marketing. So some of the changes are geolocation and geotagging and geofencing, the whole area of knowing a person's location and adding that information into what else they're doing. So now increasingly people can be identified based on what store they're at. So as you walk into a store, if you have the right app on your phone, and pretty much all the stores in the United States have been geofenced now, which is a term that refers to, essentially drawing a line around the store so they know you've just walked into a Walgreens or a Walmart or Target or something. So all that information is then becomes available to marketers to identify products you might want to use, try to get you to switch to another store, so on and so forth. As you move around the store, there's near-field communication is going to be coming, which will make it even more granular to what aisle you're in and what, even eventually what products you're near and so on and so forth. So this tremendous amount of information about what people's behavior is the next leg of the big data revolution, I think.
Very true. Now, you mentioned near-field communications. It's very interesting that this week there's a big battle brewing over near-field communications, with Walgreens and CVS turning off Apple Pay, which relies exclusively on near-field communications, in order to support maybe another system. So we're about to see the Betamax Blu-ray VCR battle that we had in video recorders played out with this near-field communications. My guest is Owen Shapiro, author of the book Brand Shift. And Owen, one of the things that I found very interesting in your book was the available advertising mediums of the day really helped to define the brands. And you make what I thought was a remarkable observation that for the first time, we have two concurrent powerful forces impacting brands, social media and mobile, at the same time. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about why that's important and how that might change the scope of marketing.
So it's part of a discussion really about understanding where brands come from and what drives brands. So what's happened over time is the communication technologies have evolved increasingly rapidly, and those communication technologies, let's just call them what they are. There's newspapers, for example, were really one of the first national methods for communicating brands, and they drove sort of the first golden age of brands, where we got Quaker Oats and Coca-Cola and things like that. And that lasted about 70 years, obviously we still have newspapers, but where newspapers were sort of the disruptive and really driving communication format. And after that came radio and television and so on and so forth. And the cycle times between those have gotten shorter and shorter and shorter, so that television was dominant for about 30 years or so, before cable came in and so on and so forth. What's happened now, though, is that you've got broadband internet was, it had about a 10-year reign where it was really the dominant. And when I say dominant, it doesn't mean obviously broadband internet's still around, but the really cutting-edge technology and the abilities to really disrupt and have these huge wins is not really in broadband anymore. People pretty much understand it, and, it's very well researched and so on. Now it's really onto mobile and social, and this is the first time that you've had a turnover this quickly, only 10 years for broadband, and then simultaneously two communication methods coming up, social media and mobile, emerging simultaneously. So it's made it very disruptive for CMOs, marketers in general, but people trying to figure out strategies and so on. So, there's a lot of disruption in the marketing profession trying to figure out how to grapple with these two things simultaneously.
Well, let's drill down on that if we can for just a minute, because not only are the cycles getting shorter and shorter, but the reach is getting greater and greater. Right now, if you take a look at the planet, we've got 7.2, maybe 7.3 billion people on the planet. But what I find remarkable is of those 7.2, 6.1 billion people have cell phones of one form or another. It might not be a smartphone, but they have cell phones. That's about 85% of the world's population. Now marketers have increased reach too, but more fragmentation, because now you've got me with my mobile phone, you with your mobile phone, etc. How does a marketer address that world of unlimited opportunity and also granular information?
And that's where honestly, artificial intelligence has to come play a role. And that's because they're just, it's just too vast for humans to really sort through and make any kind of judgment about on their own. You know, the quantity of this data that's coming out and the granularity is just overwhelming, and it's gotten to the point where we do have to rely on machines. Part of it also is, though, that consumers are increasingly expecting us, you know, expecting marketers, especially younger consumers, to know a lot about them. And, you know, we hear them say in some of the research, you know, you've been collecting all this information on me, yet I'm still getting these mass market mailers to my home that have nothing to do with me. You know, I'm getting, you know, diaper ads and I don't have a kid kind of thing. So it's sort of raising the expectation on the consumer side that they're going to be catered to in a way. It's almost, you know, one-to-one marketing based on this data that they're, you know, they've sort of given up some sense of privacy. You know, the notion of what privacy is really changed, where it's more about controlling the data that you have out there versus not sharing it at all for most people.
My guest is Owen Shapiro. He's the author of the book Brand Shift, The Future of Brands and Marketing. And Owen, with everybody having a smartphone in some form or another, this accelerated electronic connectedness, as you call it, you assert that there are really two realities now that are developing. There's the physical reality of us meeting face-to-face, and then there's the screen reality. What do you mean by screen reality? And also the fact that you say that screen reality is changing at an accelerated rate over physical reality. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, we coined the word screen reality or neurosphere just to make it clear or help communicate that what folks are doing on all these LED screens that they're walking around with during it all day is creating really an alternative reality. They've integrated that screen into their daily lives, and it's an ongoing part. It's an equal or sometimes dominant part of what they really are concerned about and look at, and where they get satisfaction and where they look for praise and accomplishment and things like that. And those are all the things that sort of drive a lot of the things that drive advertising. So increasingly, it's how people feel and react on these screens that's going to become, you know, increasingly important part of our economy. And brands, you know, brands are ideas, so brands flow pretty well in concept to screen reality. So it'll be interesting to see over time how they evolve and to take advantage of that.
All right. I guess where I'm puzzled by all of that, though, is if you look at screen reality and how it's changing the physical reality of stuff, why then is Amazon, which is probably the ultimate screen retailer, opening up a physical store in Manhattan?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of reasons, you know, that could be. I'm not privy to any specifics there, but my guess is that it has to do with, you know, the fact that Amazon is looking to get into, for example, grocery store retailing and is starting to experiment with that, which is one of the elements of retail that has resisted the online incursion the most. So I think they're trying to get some experience with physical stores. But also, I would say it's just that Amazon has a ton of dough, you know, and they're going to do a lot of different things.
And they're going to spend
like it. Google, you know, is trying, you know, is branching out into solar and so on and so forth. So there's sort of related industries they get into just because they're successful.
I guess that's true. Owen, there's just so much to cover. Unfortunately, we are out of time. My guest has been Owen Shapiro, author of the book Brand Shift, The Future of Brands and Marketing. Owen, if you've piqued the interest of some of my listeners, they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go?
You know, a good place would be Amazon, and just go to Amazon and type in Brand Shift, two words, and my book will come up to the top. Also, we've got a website with some free chapters and some other free material, which is brandshiftbook.com. If someone wants to visit that, they can get quite a bit of information.
Owen, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my guest here on The Bill Frank Show. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
It.